You're listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. It's the Coaching Perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Thanks a lot. Well, welcome, everybody, to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Today, we're going to be talking about the three things that you must do to sell your services. We're also going to be talking about milkshakes and how that will help you. So, hey, stay tuned because you want to get that connection. That's important. But first, if you're listening to our podcast, thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. While you're there, be sure to check out our archives for some of our past shows with great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email at doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Hey, and if you've missed any of our previous shows, just go to dgefeller, that's D-G-F-E-L-L-E-R, podbean.com, or our webpage, thecoachingperspective.com. You can find me somehow. Google it. That's what I do for everything else. Well, look, today's program, you know, as we said at the start of the show, our topic for today is three things you must do to sell your services. And you know what? It doesn't matter if you're selling coaching or engineering or consulting services. The three rules are still the same. And what we're going to talk about today is not really new information or ideas. It's frankly been covered by many knowledgeable experts, written about in books, and presented at sales seminars. But I would like to look at this from a different perspective, that of a new provider of services. And while these rules apply to your sales techniques, I think they have even more value if you apply them to how you think about your business and how you present yourself to the world. So let's skip the mystery. I'm going to tell you right here at the top of the show, run the risk that you're going to click off. Here's the three rules that you have to follow to be successful in selling your service. One, you must know how you are different from the competition. Two, you must know what problems you're going to solve for your clients. And three, you must be able to tell a compelling story that illustrates how you are different and what problems you solve. Okay, there it is. You can stop listening right now, especially if you feel like you've heard all this before. But wait, before you leave, do you really know the answer to these questions? And if you do not, do you know how to find the answers to these questions? That's what we're going to talk about here today. Let's start with the first rule. You must know how you are different from the competition. You know, this sounds simple, but let me give you a few ground rules before you respond to this question in your head. You cannot use any of the following responses to answer this question. You can't say we provide quality service because who says they don't? You can't say we care about our customers because who doesn't? You can't say we provide better customer service because doesn't everyone? You can't say we're responsive like you'd say you were unresponsive. You can't say I understand your issues because that just leaves you open to now prove it. You can't give me an explanation of your process because I don't really care how you do it. I only care what you do. And you can't say you're the lowest price because now you're just a commodity that's subject to the whims of the marketplace and it has nothing to do with what you're delivering. So get the idea? We're really looking for real core differences between you and your competition. You know, I can't tell you how many people I have asked this question of, and they start to give me these sort of stock answers that read like somebody's mission statement, something that's etched on a wall that sounds good, means nothing. What we're looking for is the real differences. So how do you even know what the real differences are? I mean, one thing is, do you know what your competition is valued for? Have you stopped to think about who your key competitors are and what people value them for? You know, and then have you looked at yourself and said, what is it that you have that is, makes you different from the person sitting next to you that provides similar services? It might be in your area of experience. You might say, you're familiar with their business and their customers and their processes. It might be that you've done what they're doing, that you had a similar company or you served in a similar position. It could be that you're a recognized expert in what they do or who they sell to or how they do it. So there's that whole experience thing that you might be coming to this sales call or this issue of thinking about how you're different, looking at your past experiences and saying, how do they apply to the customers that I'm going to be dealing with? It might be in the area of culture, what I call culture and attitude. You know, maybe you are used to fast-paced environments. Maybe you're innovative, known for your out-of-the-box thinking. Maybe you're great at breaking down complex issues into manageable tasks. Maybe you're socially motivated, not so much profit motivated. Maybe you have a passion for what this potential client does, their product or how they do it. Maybe your skill set is that you're laser focused. You really have the ability to hone in on one thing and really beat it to death. Maybe you have a track record of being the first at whatever it is you do. Maybe you're a human being, not a faceless business or a faceless building or a faceless website. Maybe it's your personality that makes you significantly different. You know, it might be that your difference is in the area of services. You know, do you offer services that other people don't? Do you provide free services that others charged for? Do you deliver your services in a unique way? You know, all of these things require some serious introspection about how you think you are different from the competition. We're going to get to how you communicate this, but first you have to really understand what it is that is your, what salespeople like to call your USP, your unique sales proposition. What is unique about you? You know, if you're selling a product, it's almost a little easier. I can say that I am selling this bottle of water that's sitting on my desk, and it is truly unique because the bottle is bigger or smaller or shaped different than anybody else's. The water is colder or hotter or flavored. The water comes from someplace nobody's ever been before. It's cleaner, purer. Whatever it is, those are my product attributes that make it uniquely different from other people who sell bottled water. But when we get down to selling services, the services generally are almost all the same. Now, I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but, you know, I'm a coach. I've been coaching for 19 years now. My coaching is not that much different from 90% of the other coaches. When you just talk about coaching, many of them went through the same training that I went through. Many of them follow the same literature that I read. Many of them have been trained in the same way to listen, to have empathy, to ask questions, to hold the client accountable, all of those kinds of things that coaches are trained in. And this would apply whether you're selling engineering services or whether you're selling accounting services or any other kind of service. The services typically aren't that different. So you've got to really look at what is different about you, your company, in the way you provide these services. Do you provide them in a different way? Do you package them differently? Are they different? Do you charge different? All of those things that we just sort of talked about. You know, I was talking about this with a coach just the other day. And this coach is, she doesn't classify herself as a business coach. But yet, frankly, most of her work in recent years has been in the area of business coaching. And she says, well, hey, Doug, but you've got an advantage. You can cite your business experience. You can talk about the companies that you started, and you can talk about the companies that you were the CEO of, and you can talk about the return on investment that you helped generate, and all of those kind of business metrics that are part of my background and experience? She says, I don't have any of those things. And I said, okay, so you don't have those things. You haven't, your background isn't in business. Why, what is it that you do for your clients? What is it that they value? And she says, well, I help them stay focused. You know, they're all over the board when they're thinking about their issues. I work with them on removing or controlling the fear they have about not doing anything or doing something or taking big risks. So I work with them on the fear issue. And I help bring them clarity with the kind of questions that I ask that really makes it obvious to them, self-evident, what they should be addressing and what they should be talking about. You know, focus, remove fear, clarity. Sounds to me like those are the things that you have that maybe make you uniquely different from every other coach. Those aren't things I would think of saying about me. I might do those, but I don't look at those as my core competencies, my core unique differences. And then the next step is when you talk about these things that you are different from everybody else in these areas, what kind of problems do these talents help you solve for your clients? Which takes us to the second rule. The second rule is you must know what problems that you're going to solve for your clients. You know, in sales language, this means selling solutions to problems, not features and benefits. In coaching language, it means stop explaining how you coach and instead talk about the problems that you're going to help the client solve. Focus on the client's needs, not what you want to sell them. It is so frustrating to me to talk to newly minted coaches, and really this would apply to anybody new to their service field, and you ask them what they do, and they proceed to tell you the process. This is how I coach. Well, we meet once a week. We talk on the phone. We meet in person. We Skype. It's a 30-minute session. I ask you questions. I listen. I hold you accountable. I ask you next week whether you followed up with these things. That's how you do something. I don't really care how you do something. I'm coming to you because I have a problem. And I want to know, can you solve my problem? You know, now, it should be really easy for coaches because, you know, they are oversaturated with the empathy gene. And high empathy usually leads to you finding out what's troubling the client so that you can help them. Most coaches are really good at getting clients to talk about themselves. And that's what you have to learn in the service business. It's not how you are going to help them, but what will the solution be if we work together on this problem? Let me tell you an interesting way of looking at this. I discovered this in a book that's titled, How Will You Measure Your Life? It's by three authors, Christensen, Allworth, and Dillon. They talk about what job did the client hire you for. They say it's a way of focusing on what problem they are looking for you to provide the solution to. You know, and here's where the milkshake story comes in. They tell a story. I love this story. They tell a story about a company that wanted to, a large national chain, and they wanted to sell more milkshakes. So they hired a firm to do all this research, customer research, as to how could they make their milkshakes better. Should they be thicker? Should they be cheaper? Should they be bigger? Should they be more chocolatey? What were the things? And they experimented and tried all of these things that the sort of focus groups came up with. None of them impacted their sales of milkshakes whatsoever at all, or at least not significantly. They went to another group. The group said, you know, let's look at what is the problem that you're solving when people buy your milkshake. And their way of putting it is, when I buy a milkshake, I'm hiring it for the job of solving some problem I've got. So they put people into the stores and they watched who came in and bought milkshakes. And they tracked it by hour. Who came in the morning? Were they alone? How were they dressed? Where were they going? Who came in the afternoon? You know, and they collected all of this data. And once they got the data, they sort of segregated it out. And then they did in-depth survey with the people after they came out of the store as to, you know, what was the job you hired this milkshake to do? Although they didn't ask them that because people would think you were crazy, you know. But they asked them, why did you buy a milkshake? And what they found was in the morning, the reason people bought a milkshake was invariably they had a long commute. They had a 20-minute-plus commute. They needed something to do while they were commuting. A thick milkshake absorbed through a small straw kept them busy for 20 minutes in the car and entertained them. They also found that these people knew they were going to be hungry by mid-morning, and they needed something that would stick with them. You know, that something that a health bar or a banana wasn't really going to do for them. So they bought this milkshake to solve the problem of entertainment, of giving them something to do on the way to work. They had tried hiring other tools to solve this job. They had tried bananas. They had tried donuts, too many crumbs in the car, left me looking a mess when I got to work, all of these other things. They interviewed the group in the afternoon, and they found this afternoon group was totally different. It was mostly dads in there with their son or with their children. And what they found was that as when they interviewed them, that the dads had typically come through the last couple of hours of saying no a million times to their children. And now they're in there getting a snack or dinner, and the kid says, can I have a milkshake? And the dad finally goes, ah! This is something I can say yes to. Yes, you can have a milkshake. And he starts to feel good about his parenting skills. But that doesn't last too long because the dad quickly eats the food. The child quickly eats the food. And then the child is sitting there sucking on this thick milkshake that takes 20 minutes or longer to drink through this thin straw. And they found that half of the milkshake was getting thrown away because the dads got impatient and said, come on, it's time to go. Get rid of that. We have to leave now. So here was the same service, the milkshake, being provided to solve two different problems. Recognizing what the problem was that the client was trying to solve allowed the company to then address the service or product that they were going to provide in a different way. In the morning, they looked at providing quicker service because these people were commuting. They didn't want to stand in line. They looked at providing thick drinks. They looked at providing maybe pieces of fruit in the drink to create surprises, mixes. In the afternoon, they looked at maybe the milkshakes should only be half size. Maybe they shouldn't be so thick. They should be able to absorb them quicker so that the dad isn't as frustrated. You know, I tell this milkshake story because it's all about identifying what are the client's needs, not what you have to sell. Remember, the company originally wanted to create different flavors and thicker milkshakes. They didn't understand what the customer really wanted. And that's the key to the service business. That's the key to selling anything, really, is identifying what is the customer's problem, and do I have the background, the skill set, the abilities to solve that problem? You know, you need to get, one of the key issues here is you not only need to know what kind of problem you can solve for your clients, but you need to get them to tell you what are the problems. Before you launch into what you can do, you first need to identify the problem so you can match up your story with their issues. You know, any good networking book will guide you through the key steps here. They tell you when you meet somebody, and forget about the eye contact, the handshake, the business card, all that kind of stuff. But they give you some simple guidelines, and they're all going to tell you this. Talk to the people. Listen to the people. Get information about them. Then get them interested in what you do and find a way to help them. Now, nothing is more interesting than a conversation that is about me. Nothing is more interesting than a conversation that's about you. When people get us to talk about ourselves and what we are truly interested in, we walk away invariably going, that person was so brilliant. They were so smart. What a great conversation. Can't wait to run into them again and have another interesting conversation. So number two on the rules here is identifying the problems that the client or the prospect has that your unique talents, experience, culture, abilities, tendencies will let you solve, which then takes us to the third rule. The third rule is that you must be able to tell a compelling story that illustrates how you are different and what problems you solve. Stories. You know, it's rare that you sell services on your first contact. So the key is that you need to create a memorable experience in preparation for your follow-up call, which is probably when you're really going to sell something. And you know, as human beings, we do not remember facts and figures. We remember stories. We are and always have been a culture of storytelling. You know, the best book that I ever read on this is called Tell to Win by Peter Guber. He's an entertainment industry expert, been president of a number of the big movie studios. He says that we are all in the emotional transportation business. I love that. The emotional transportation business. That success is won by creating compelling stories that have the power to move people, transportation business, to move people. That purposeful stories, those created with a specific mission in mind, are absolutely essential in persuading others to take action. And that's the kind of story that we're talking about here. Purposeful stories. It's a story that showcases, and I use the word showcase, not tell, because tell sounds like I'm giving you a list of things. Showcasing sounds like I'm creating a story. There's a scene. There's characters to it. There's drama. You know, and that story that showcases your unique differences from the competition, and it does this by telling a story about the problems that you have solved for your clients. And, you know, we all need more than one story because just like the milkshake story, they had for the same product or the same service, whatever you want to call it, they had two different classes of clients, the morning people that were looking for one problem to be solved and the afternoon people that were looking for another problem to be solved. So you would have to have two different stories. In the morning, you would tell the story about how this milkshake lasts and how entertaining it is to drink. And you know, in the afternoon, you talk about how this isn't going to take that long to drink. And it's pretty healthy for you and it isn't going to hurt your children and that sort of thing. So, you know, once we have these stories, it's easy to listen to us prospect, identify their problem, and then tell the right story that illustrates our unique ability to solve that problem. You know, if you're new to selling this service, you know, because I've talked to a number of new coaches and they go, well, yeah, Doug, that's great. You've been coaching for 19 years. You could tell stories all day long about clients and things that you did in working with them. But I've only been coaching. I've only just gone through training. I've just gotten certified. I'm still in the middle of training. I don't have any stories to tell. Baloney. If you think about it, I'll bet you have stories to tell about how you have helped solve the kinds of problems that you're going to make a living solving using the kinds of skills that you already have. You know, we sort of get to a philosophy that I have that in many ways, coaching is a tool to solve a problem. I'm not buying coaching to eat coaching. Coaching is what I buy as a tool to help me solve the problem. It's in my tool case. It isn't the end solution. Just buying coaching time is going to produce nothing. but working with a coach to help them identify and to help them help me get creative about solutions, to look at my problems from different perspectives, to be willing to support me in taking risks, to keep me focused on the key issues, to hold my hand when I'm afraid of moving. Somebody who does that to help me solve my problems is someone that I'm more than willing to pay for, you know? So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about you've got to find a story. Now, if you can't find a story, and I really suggest that if you don't think you can find a story, then you need to get a coach and they can help you find a story. But worst case, you can't find a story at all, find somebody else's story. Find somebody else's story that showcases the kind of talents that you have, that solves the kind of problems that you're going to solve. Maybe this is a coach in Africa. Maybe it's a coach in New York City. It's a coach that isn't going to be competitive with you in your area. No harm, no foul in using what they do, using their story as a way to showcase for a potential prospect here what you can do for them. Because again, to me, it all boils down in selling services. It boils down to what is the problem that you're going to solve. And frequently, we don't think about this. You know, and I had an interesting observation with a client, an architectural client, and they were looking and they did some research, sort of an annual project of interviewing their customers to find out, you know, what their customers thought about them. What is it that the customers valued? And they thought they knew what the customers valued going in. I mean, but they had a big surprise in that many of the customers valued things that they hadn't thought about talking about at all. Some of the customers valued how quick your service is. You know, hey, you're an architect, I'm a builder, the clock is ticking on my loan. You know, it's not about creative design. It's about anything that can get through the building department and let me start construction and start selling so I can pay down this loan and stop the interest clock from ticking. That was one group's criteria. Another group's criteria might have been, I want the most unique design anybody's ever seen. I like to win awards. I want people to talk about how great my project was. I don't care if the sales absorption is slow. I want it to be truly mind-boggling. And from a design sense. And somebody else said, you know what? I've got a budget. We only can spend so much per square foot to build this. I need to sell it out within 18 months. So whatever you can do to design something that can hit that cost budget, that is going to be generally acceptable to the most people, that lets me hit my absorption rate, that's what I call a winner. So even architects who think that they're all providing the same service, they're all designing houses, they're all designing them for builders, different builders are coming to the architect with different problems that they want solved. Yes, there is a base architectural document that they need, but the reason they picked this architect is because this architect told a story about their unique talents in the area that resonated with a problem that this particular client was most concerned about. You know, as I wrap up our discussion of the three things needed to sell your services, let me just touch on the issue of relationships. Many people call the type of selling we've been talking about relationship selling. But I'm afraid that the term relationship has been confused with networking. In my mind, networking is that first contact event, that sort of superficial dialogue, no matter how well-intentioned, that we have with someone we do not yet know very well. Relationships mean to me that longer-term, more personal contact that we have with people. The key to a relationship is that it is based on my identifying what that other person needs and then doing everything I can to give it to them. It is never based on my giving them what I think they should have. it's based on the language we've just been using. Think about the relationship from the prospect's perspective of hiring you for the job they want done. This applies to my spouse, my clients, and my friends equally. And if I really work at it, then it also applies to those who are in the process of moving from a network contact to a person that I have a relationship with. So think about the three rules that we've talked about. Number one, what is your unique skill set that it makes you different from the competition? How do you stand out? Number two, what are the problems that you're going to solve for your client? Not how, but what are the problems that you're going to solve for your client? And three, what are the stories, the compelling stories, the stories that I'm going to remember next week that showcase your unique differences in solving the problems that you've identified that I have? You know, that's what we're talking about here today. That's what the three rules are. Think of them in terms of developing relationships, not in terms of selling services. You know, it sounds a lot friendlier even in my head, and so it makes me behave different. When I walk out the door in a sales mode, I am not that nice a person. When I walk out the door looking to create new long-term relationships, I am a much more fascinating person. And I want you to think of your selling as one of building relationships, some of which will pay you money, some of which will provide opportunities for you to sell services, and some of which may be just enjoyable, and some of which may, who knows, be a waste of your time. But is anything really a waste of your time? What do you learn from a sales relationship conversation that didn't work? I think you can learn a lot. I know that all my learning, all my best learning, comes about from analyzing the mistakes that I've made. Very seldom does it come from analyzing the successes that I've had. So that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about the three rules or the three things that you need to do to sell your services. And as we wrap our show up here for today, maybe we've cut it a little shorter. We've eliminated a commercial or two, so that gave us a little extra time to talk. But I just want to tell you that I truly enjoy the opportunities here to bring you information. And in this case, it isn't new, but maybe the way of looking at it is new. And I would really encourage you that if this is resonating with you, that you might think about those books that I mentioned. You might think about, got it written down right here. You might think about the book by Christensen, Allworth, and Dillon called How Will You Measure Your Life? And the book by Peter Guber, Tell to Win. Both great books, both excellent reads in their area. So this is Doug Gefeller signing off, thanking you for all of your support. I hope you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.